the question and answer program everyone enjoys.
I would say yeah.
That's right.
That's right.
Here are the questions.
Hello, Chris.
Good evening. How are you tonight?
I am well. It's all riding on you right now, Chris.
Good Lord, so you decided to be lonely.
Well, there's a few more calling now, but goodness me, you were the bravest person out there.
I'm glad to hear it. And I must admit, I am not too sure on this. I think it was Adelaide, but I'm probably wrong.
You are correct. It was Adelaide.
I had a feeling.
Very well. Now, were you around at the time?
No, I certainly wasn't, but my folks were, and they were probably my teenagers at the time.
Yep.
They have fond memories of it, but I think one of them snuck out of school, the other one couldn't.
Yeah, there was an enormous reception they had in Adelaide. Something like 250,000 to 300,000 people were lining the streets from the airport to the city. And Adelaide had originally been left off the list. And then Bob Francis, who was a local radio personality, God, I used to listen to him when I was media monitoring back in the early 90s. Yeah, he helped convince them to travel to Adelaide and play 4 sold-out shows. So good for Bob Francis.
I never realised. Yeah, it's an astonishing thing, let's face it. I mean, they were a once-in-a-generation thing at that stage. It was like every boy and girl band combined all turned up at once. And our surprise.
I wonder if anyone who's going to call in tonight actually went to any of those first concerts back in 1964. That would be pretty amazing.
It would be astonishing. As I understand it, the band themselves said in most of these concerts, they couldn't hear themselves.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone could really hear them. It was just a matter of being there and, having a good scream.
Yeah, I guess concerts of that like probably had never happened before with all the girls fainting and screaming. I mean, I wonder how many like that had happened before or how much this was a complete departure.
I guess it was kind of revolutionary at that stage where they did just go from having songs and the odd picture in a magazine to them being in movies and on radio. And it must have been their entire world all turned up right before their eyes.
All right. Well, Chris, I'm glad to say that you've led the way. You've become a trendsetter. The board's full now.
Excellent. Glad to hear it.
That is good. Now, Amanda
we're going to need them.
Amanda from Newcastle has just said, have I ever achieved something through radio that I am proud of? Well, Amanda, I helped a school in South Australia's mid-north. I think it was Gladstone High School. I helped them get a school bus. So that's actually the thing that I'm proud of. And then after I'd done, they even invited me to come along and speak at the final assembly of the year because they were so happy with the work I'd done helping them get the school bus. So I reckon that's my proudest achievement, Amanda, through radio. Okay, Chris. Question 2. Premiering on October the 6th, 1927, which was the first feature-length film to feature synchronized singing and speech?
That was Al Jolson, the jazz singer.
It was the jazz singer.
Yeah, I went to see the Jolson stage play. God, it must have been 25 years ago now or something at the I think it was the Star Theatre down in the Star in Sydney at the time. So yeah, I remember that.
Right. Well, you've got 2 from 2. Is this a particular area of interest for you, sort of pop history?
I guess it is, but only through osmosis. I've never really kind of sat and studied any of these things. But I was on the radio over here in Port Stephens for a while there, and I was calling out when we had the big fires at Saltash, and taking all the. It was quite interesting at that stage because we kind of became the first communications hub except for the emergency channels for people to call in and tell us, right, go to this road, go to that road because this one's ablaze. So, being on the radio can be quite an astonishing thing from time to time. But that bus thing you said was quite impressive. That must have taken a fair bit of work, that one.
It took harassing a lot of politicians. That's what it took. Anyway,
yep. Good on you.
Shannon from Caboolture said, my mum lived in Adelaide and was 14 in 1964. Was the only time she wagged school, but she said it was worth it. Tana from Bella Vista says, my husband saw the Beatles in Sydney. Okay, question 3, Chris. What was used as fake blood for the shower scene in Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho?
Oh, I've heard of this. It was chocolate syrup.
Look at you, Chris. It was chocolate
there
syrup.
There could be blacks over that showed up on the black and white, so it looked like blood. Yeah.
Three from nice three. This is an impressive start, Chris. Maybe we didn't need all those other people on the line after all.
Oh, we will. Trust me.
Someone else says, my wife went to the Beatles concert in Adelaide as a schoolgirl. Her cousin had queued up all night with friends. In the morning, her mother took over and made her go to school during the day, but they were ready to go to the concert that night. Marion says, my mother got second row tickets, oh my goodness, for the Beatles in Sydney, but I went to the beach that Saturday and someone nicked my ticket. My mother never forgave me. Marion!
It was a good day at the beach.
Oh, that's terrible. Oh, no.
Oh, dear.
Question four. Actors Judy Nunn and Helen Hemingway were renowned for creating which Australian television first, which went to air in February 1974?
Oh, you've got me now. Okay. I reckon that's going to be around the time of number 96. I'm going to have a cracker that was the first kiss of two women on Australian television or something like that.
Good grief, Chris. You are correct. It wasn't in number 96, though. It was
right.
A show called The Box that Judy Nunn was starring in. Now, funnily enough, I actually interviewed Judy Nunn. She writes books these days, and I had her on I think it was about 3 years ago. And in that conversation, I actually asked her about that kiss.
Part of it. I instigated it.
Okay.
Oh, yes, I was, yeah. She was known as the bitch of the box, Vicky Stafford. Fabulous role, because like Betty Davis said, you know, the bitch is always the best role. So it's like, yeah, Vicky was voracious. I mean, she had everybody. She was very rampantly sexual. Publicity at Crawford's Television actually said to me, look, Judy, God only knows what sort of letters you might get, fan letters. Do you want them to all go via me and I'll vet them so that if you get any nasty... I said, no, if somebody's going to be writing to me or to the character, I want to know what they're saying. I never had one bitchy, nasty letter at all. I had a couple of marriage proposals, blokes who thought they were going to turn a gay Sheila, and I had some heartbreaking ones, like, for instance, how did you tell your mother that you were a lesbian? How did you tell your parents? I would have to write back and say, darling, please don't believe everything you see on the silver screen. Very difficult. I have actually, it was when I was in Goulburn, and this woman recognised me, and she would have been younger than me, a good 10 years or so, but she was a spring chicken. And she was really, really, she put her arms around me and wanted to hug me, and she said she remembered The Box. And I said, but you would have only been a kid then. Mm. She said, yes. And that's what gave me the strength to come out and tell my family. That was you, you know. And that would have been a woman in her 60s, in her early 60s. And she still carried that with her.
So there you go, Chris. Yeah, it was certainly a big moment for a number of people who watched it, but you managed to get that right. So you're doing very nicely.
Yeah, I must admit. I'm happily enjoying myself at the moment, but don't worry, next caller, it won't be long.
Okay. Grant from Grenwith says, I was at one of the four concerts in Centennial Hall in Adelaide thanks to classmates who queued over the weekend. I was 15. Wow. Okay, question five. If Elvis is the king of rock and roll and Chuck Berry is the father of rock and roll and the Beatles are the band that changed rock and roll forever, who is considered to be the architect of rock and roll?
Oh. If we're going to go for architect, I remember years ago I used to do a little bit of singing and there was a mate of mine who used to always talk about, you know, there was a country and western bloke who bastardised the whole thing. If you hadn't said Chuck Berry already, I probably would have been going that way. It's a stab in the dark, Little Richard.
It's Little Richard, Chris.
You're joking.
Here he is.
I'm Little Richard, baby. I'm the innovator, I'm the emancipator, I'm the originator, I'm the architect of rock and roll. Don't you forget it. This is me. Nobody but me. Ain't nothing like me nowhere.
All right, we are halfway to a black magnet here on Weekend Nightlife. Are you familiar with the black magnet, Chris?
I have heard of these things. I've never seen one. I've got five or six magnets sitting on my little cupboard inside there from the 7 o'clock one and the night one and so forth, but I've never seen a black one.
Yeah, well, if you get 10 in a row correct, you will win a black one. They're not that common. It's not that many people who have them. So you are halfway to joining a very elite group. Jenny from Central Victoria says, regarding girls screaming at concerts, I grew up in Sydney and my auntie and uncle lived in Double Bay. Although I was too young to go, Johnny Ray was playing at the old stadium at Rushcutters Bay, but was staying in Double Bay. I vividly remember them complaining about the hordes of girls screaming outside his hotel. I think it might have been about 1957, quite a few years before the Beatles. Okay, so screaming girls was something that was going on already. Someone else says, I was at boarding school on Green Hill Road and we refused to go home for an exit weekend because the Beatles were supposed to go along the road to King William Road. After waiting for several hours, we discovered they turned up West Terrace and around to the town hall. One of our friends who'd left school earlier was working in the city and followed the crowds to town hall to see what was happening. We were so jealous. We had a reunion for our last year at school last year. So much fun catching up and sharing stories of the Beatles in 1964. Ah, fantastic.
Oh, well.
Okay, Chris. In January 1979, which American sitcom and its two spin-offs that I will get you to name occupied the top three spaces in the Nielsen ratings?
Well, okay. The one, okay. Happy Days would be my first thought.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. And then what are the two other shows?
Oh, I've heard of Joni Loves Chachi. The only other one I could think of would be Mork and Mindy.
Oh, Mork and Mindy is one, but Joni Loves Chachi is not the third.
Good Lord.
Chris.
Well, I tell you what, before I go, Mork and Mindy. So, obviously, Robin Williams, it was his launch pad from, you know, onto TV and so forth. I think it was 95, and I lived on Hereford Street in Glebe. And at the end of the road was the Harold Park Hotel, and they had a little comedy club in the back. And I was told by my sister that there was a very likely chance that Robin Williams was going to show up there. He was out on a tour, and she'd heard it on Triple J, and the place was packed, and a lot of good comedians came up, and Ostentatious came up, was doing Australiana. Got halfway through it, and then Robin Williams poked his head out from behind the curtain. And he came out, and he probably did about half an hour of just stand up, and yeah, my belly hurt, just hurt.
That's incredible. Wonderful. Yeah. Now, Joni Loves Chachi was a spin-off, but it just wasn't one of the three that were hogging the top three spots in the ratings that year.
Makes a lot of sense, actually.
You were on it, but not quite.
I know what the third one is now. I'm not saying a word.
Hey, Chris, yep. You've done phenomenally well. It was wonderful to have you on the show.
And you too. Thanks all very right. much. Thanks. Have a great night.
Thanks for starting us off too. Now, Penny, who is now 82, says, my friend and I posed as a reporter and a camera person from the New Guinea Times to go into the Hilton Hotel in Sydney where the Beatles were giving interviews. We were 18 years old and I had a box camera. Penny, are you telling us you actually were at a press conference with the Beatles based on this ruse? That's amazing. That is an excellent story. So many lovely stories coming in here tonight on via the SMS too. Lulu is in Melbourne, and Lulu, you are a first time caller. Welcome.
Thank you. Oh, I think I'm in way over my head though.
All you can do is have a go.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So we're on question six. In January 1979, which American sitcom and its two spin-offs occupy the top three spaces in the Nielsen ratings? We have Happy Days, we have Mork and Mindy, but what was the third one?
I don't know, the Brady Bunch?
No, it wasn't the Brady Bunch.
Oh, gosh.
Never fear, Lulu, don't be put off. Call another time.
Thank you, I will.
All right, nice to chat with you. I was 14, no, four, says someone, when I saw the Beatles in Sydney. My mum wouldn't let my 12-year-old sister go with just a cousin. So to my sister's shame, Mum came with me. I remember being held up and standing on seats and I still couldn't see anything. And the screaming. Oh, that's also an incredible memory. A few of you know what this other one is. Adrian at Bella Vista, that's correct. Connie, you've got it. Yep, Ray in the Bay, Leroy in Penrith, Harry in the Bay, Jim in Campbelltown, quite a few. Yep, Bernadette. Oh, you've mentioned this one that we are still looking for. Who's up next? Dave in Laverton. Hey, Dave.
Hello, Suzanne. How are you going?
Or is it Laverton?
Laverton, yeah. Laverton. It's in W. Out in the goldfield.
Okay. What is this third of this American sitcom, Happy Days, and its two spin-offs that occupied the top three spaces in the Nielsen ratings in January 1979?
Well, you said Mork and Mindy was one of them. Now, I'm just thinking the spin-off from Happy Days was probably Laverne and Shirley. Is that right?
Is that your answer?
That'll be my answer.
Yes, it was Laverne and Shirley. Nicely done. We are doing a history quiz about, well, pop culture tonight here on Nightlife for something a little bit different. Dave is with us from Laverton. Dave, question 7. Which unreleased at the time single did Elvis Presley perform for his first appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show in 1956?
Unreleased. I'm going to go to Heartbreak Hotel.
It's not Heartbreak Hotel.
Oh.
Thanks, Dave.
See ya.
All right, nice to hear from you. Gosh, there's all sorts of interesting SMSs coming in that I'm just trying to have a look at. Oh, someone else is saying, by the way, George Harrison of the Beatles fame came back to Adelaide in 1985 to watch the first Australian Formula One Grand Prix race. He was a big fan of Formula One. Thank you. Sorry, just having a look at what else is coming in here. Who's got this one? Anna in Northcote, that's the correct answer. Amanda in Newcastle, you also have it. Let's talk to Helen in Bendigo. Hi, Helen.
Yeah, hi, Suzanne. In Coolangatta tonight, but yes, normally from Bendigo. the answer to the question, I think, is Jailhouse Rock.
It's not Jailhouse Rock, Helen.
Oh, okay. Can I just tell you, yes, I was at the Beatles concert in Melbourne at Festival Hall. It was a June night and extremely cold with a fog, a deep fog coming off because it's very close to the docks. And apparently the Beatles said that it reminded them of Liverpool. So that was really typical Melbourne. And can I just tell you that having escaped from the weather down there right now, and I was talking to two people in Melbourne, and it's miserable down there today, apparently.
I see. Just like it was perhaps when the Beatles were there, it wouldn't be quite so cold.
Well, that was a June night.
Now, Helen, do you remember the screaming? Was there screaming everywhere?
Even though I was a young thing and, you know, loved the Beatles, I was furious because I really actually did want to hear them sing. You couldn't hear a thing. It was so... And you were sitting on concrete bleachers, right? Mm. Oh, no, it was awful. It was really awful, actually. That's the truth. I'm sorry to dispel the romance. No, I didn't like it.
All right, concrete bleachers and screams everywhere that meant you couldn't even hear the music.
And a foggy night.
Right. Well, at least it was memorable.
Yes, it was memorable.
Hey, thanks, Helen. Okay. So not Jailhouse Rock. That's not the answer that I'm looking for. All right. Ah, look who it is. Hello, Brian.
Hello, Suzanne. I gather from what you've just been talking about that I will have absolutely no idea what the answer to the question, which I haven't heard yet, will be. But anyway.
Brian, did you go see the Beatles when they came to Australia?
I was in Melbourne at the time. I remember they were in, I think it was Russell Street outside the Southern Cross Hotel, and Tony Charlton from the radio announcer was getting carried away with it was terribly dangerous with all those people in the street and so on and so forth. But no, I didn't see them at all. But I might have seen them. What year was it?
1964.
Oh, yeah, so we probably had TV at that time. I know there was TV in Melbourne. It's just a matter of whether we had it at my place. But no, I didn't. I probably saw them when they were in Russell Street.
You probably did, Brian. All right, so the question is question seven. Which unreleased at the time single did Elvis Presley perform for his first appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show in
1956? Oh, that's when TV was coming in.
Yeah. Now, we've ruled out Jailhouse Rock.
Yes. I can't even think of one to proffer.
You can't think of a single Elvis Presley song, Brian?
I really can't.
Fair enough.
Not at the moment. I probably will later on.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't put a question about Sissel in this quiz.
Yes. You're looking for one, are you?
Oh, Brian, I meant to tell you, because I saw Sarah McDonald. I ran into Sarah the other day and I said, Brian is always asking about you, and he always says to me, have you spoken to your friend recently? And so we both laughed and said, and now when Brian calls, I can say that we had a chat just the other day.
Oh, very good. She's well?
She is well, yes.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
good.
She's got lots going on. She's doing very well.
Oh, that's good to know. Yeah.
Right, sorry, Brian.
All right. Next week.
I'll have to move you along, but in the nicest possible way. Farewell, Brian. We didn't even get an answer or attempt there, so let's try Cynthia in Sunshine. Hi, Cynthia.
Good evening, Suzanne. How are you?
Yeah, good evening. Did you see the Beatles? Or are you not of the right age group?
No, but look, I was thinking about, I've got to give out a shout to the Monkees. I was saw them in Sydney in 1969 and I was only 15.
Yep, and what was that concert like?
Sounds similar to the Beatles. Lots of screaming, you know, girls, and you know, I was from the country. I travelled up from the country to Sydney to see it, and you know, I sort of had it was quite an experience for me because yeah, I just hadn't sort of imagined or experienced anything like it. It was yeah, but I had a lot of fun. I was actually driven to the concert by a relative, and we decorated the car and had all sorts of things over it and streamers and all sorts of, so it was a bit of fun to me. It was really, really, really good. Yeah.
Cynthia, the question is question seven. Which unreleased at the time single did Elvis Presley perform for his first appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show in 1956?
I'm going to have a crack at Blue Suede Shoes.
Oh, it's not Blue Suede Shoes. I'm sorry.
Oh, I thought I had it. Oh, damn it.
Thanks, Cynthia.
Oh, thank you, Suzanne.
All right, nice to speak to you. Let's go to Mike in Oak Park. Hello, Mike.
Hi, how are you this evening?
Yeah, Mike, what do you reckon this song was that Elvis performed for his first appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show?
I've got a feeling it might be wrong, but anyway. You were always on my mind. You were always on my mind.
No, it was not. You were always on my mind.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks, see Mike. Ya. Bye. Cameron in South Perth. Hello, Cameron.
Ah, Suzanne.
Greetings. What was this song that Elvis Presley performed for his first appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show in 1956?
You're nothing but a hound dog.
No, it wasn't Hound Dog.
Oh, dear.
Thanks, Cameron. Who's going to get this one? Here is Dave in St. Arnett. Hi, Dave.
G'day, Suzanne.
What was this song?
Oh, see, I was going to say Hound Dog too, from off, like when he's on Forrest Gump. He's done that, but okay, well, let's have a think. I can't think of any other Elvis songs. What about, say, Teddy Bear?
No. I've never heard of that one.
No, I just made it up. That's right.
That'd be why. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Suzanne.
Bye. Julie's got it. Joe in Sale has it. Right. Phil in Bendigo. Hi, Phil.
Excuse me, I haven't spoken for 3 hours. good, thanks. Yep.
What was the song that Elvis Presley performed for his first appearance on the Ed Sullivan Show in 1956? We have ruled out Teddy Bear, which doesn't exist, Blue Suede Shoes, You Were Always on My Mind, Hound Dog, and Jailhouse Rock.
Well, after the film a couple of years ago, which I really liked, I watched quite a lot of the old videos and stuff. Now, I mean, he sang more than one song, I know that, and I certainly can't remember the first one particularly, but I'm pretty sure he sang Love Me Tender. Whether it was the first one, I don't know, but I'll just go with that.
Love Me Tender is the correct answer.
Oh, okay. That was a bit of a fluke because I watched all that, a couple of years ago after that film came out, a few of the old ones, and some of the sad ones towards the end when he was pretty unhealthy and everything. So
yeah,
very interesting life.
All right, question A. And just to clarify, because I think I did read it a few times, but the question related to it being an unreleased single at the time. So he did sing some of the other, he did sing Ready Teddy. Oh, there was a Teddy Bear one. And a few verses of Hound Dog. He also sang a bit of Don't Be Cruel. But Love Me Tender was the unreleased single that he performed at the time. Now, question eight. For the famous 1938 War of the Worlds radio broadcast, Orson Welles provided commentary on the Martian invasion while playing an astronomer from which Ivy League university?
It's a bit of a funny one. Ivy League, Harvard?
It was not Harvard, no.
Oh, well, that's right. Thanks.
Thanks, Phil. All right, you got Love Me Tender for us, and that is much appreciated. Kim, good evening.
Good evening, Suzanne.
All right, yes, The War of the Worlds from 1938. Orson Welles provided commentary on the Martian invasion while playing an astronomer from which Ivy League university?
I was thinking it could be either Harvard or Yale. Since Yale's gone, how about Harvard? Harvard.
No, Harvard's gone.
Well, Yale then.
It's not Yale.
Hale?
Neither Yale nor Harvard.
Oh, sorry about that.
Thanks, Kim. Adrian, you have it. Bernadette, you also have it correct. David in Mount Cola.
Yeah, hi, Suzanne.
Hi. So for the famous 1938 War of the Worlds radio broadcast, Orson Welles provided commentary on the Martian invasion while playing an astronomer from which Ivy League university?
Okay, so not Harvard.
And not Yale.
Okay, I'll go with Brown.
It's not Brown.
Okay.
Thanks, David. Kingsley is in Adelaide. Evening, Kingsley.
I knew Love Me Tender. I knew the two before that.
Oh, well, what about this one?
I would have guessed either Harvard or Yale. I don't know any other Ivy League university.
Mm. So no guess?
No. I don't know any other Ivy League university.
Well, you can't guess then. All right. Thank you very much, Kingsley. We have AJ with us next. Hi, AJ.
Are you there? Hello?
Yes, I am here. Are you?
I don't know.
You sound a bit distant there. You're not on speaker, are you? Well,
No, I just grabbed the handset, so it should be loud and clear, 5 out of 5, yeah?
Well, I don't know. But anyway, it's about a 3, but we'll take it. For the famous 1938 War of the Worlds radio broadcast, Orson Welles provided commentary on the Martian invasion while playing an astronomer from which Ivy League university, not Yale, not Harvard, and not Brown.
Ooh. Ooh, oh dear. I didn't know there was that many.
I know.
Are there any clues?
No.
Good. Just run the ones you said again, please.
We've had Yale, we've had Harvard, and we've had Brown.
The only one of the others I can think of are Princeton and Stanford, so I'll say Stanford.
It's not Stanford.
Thank you.
But you might well have helped somebody else. Sonia in Pemberton. Hi, Sonia.
Hello.
Sonia, which university was this?
Maybe Princeton?
Maybe Princeton. You're correct. Here is a little from War of the Worlds.
We are ready now to take you to the Princeton Observatory at Princeton, where Carl Phillips, our commentator, will interview Professor Richard Pearson, famous astronomer.
Professor, may I begin our questions?
Any time, Mr. Phillips.
Professor, would you please tell our radio audience exactly what you see as you observe the planet Mars through your telescope?
Nothing unusual at the moment, Mr. Phillips.
Well done, Sonia. You got that one correct. It is a pop culture-themed history quiz tonight. Sonia, in 1962, Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor met and began an affair on the set of which film?
Oh, jeepers. Elizabeth Taylor. National Velvet.
Oh, it's not National Velvet.
My time.
Thanks, Sonia.
Bye.
Bye. Someone's just saying, oh, Amanda in Newcastle, apparently the War of the Worlds caused genuine panic, even though it was broadcast on Halloween. Yes, I've heard that there was quite the reaction to it. 1-300-800-222. We've now got quite a few free spots on the board once again, so please join us. Jane's got it, Sandra's got it, Susie's got it, Amanda and Harry and Joe and Jim and Bernadette and Adrian, you've all got the correct answer on this one. John in Rockley.
Hey, how are
you? Hi.
Hello. How are you?
John, in 1962, Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor met and began an affair on the set of which film?
Cleopatra.
Cleopatra is correct.
Well, I actually was going to call up for Love Me Tenor, you know, Love Me Tenor, Love Me Tenor, you know, do me Elvis impersonation.
That's well, you got a small chance. You did a small one for us then.
Okay.
Question 10. Radio presenter Grant Goldman was the host of the premiere episode of which Australian variety show on the 8th of November 1974 on the ABC?
A variety show on the ABC in 1974?
I mean, I think the word variety is a little misleading. I'm just going to say Australian show.
Gosh. Let's go Countdown.
Yes, it is Countdown.
Oh, hello. Oh, there you go.
Yeah, it didn't actually have a...
Watching Countdown every Saturday, yeah.
Yeah, it didn't actually have a permanent host at the start. Instead, commercial radio DJs rotated as hosts for the first 8 episodes. Molly Meldrum was actually the show's talent coordinator. He worked behind the scenes, but gradually he got onto the front of the camera with his humdrum segment. Eventually he became the face of the program.
So he did so much behind the scenes for Australian music and international music in general. It was a legend.
Yeah. Question 10, John. Which three musicians famously died in a plane crash near Clear Lake, Iowa on the 3rd of February 1959?
I can think of the Big Bopper, Buddy Holly. I can't think of the third one. I believe Waylon Jennings didn't want to get on the thing, but I think it was the guy that sang La Bamba. La Bamba, Richie Valens? No. Yeah, okay.
Yeah?
Whatever.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'll go with that.
Yeah, Richie Valens.
Okay.
Remember they? Yeah, because they made the film La Bamba all about him.
Yeah, that was a great film. That was a great film.
Yes,
it was an earworm, that song. We were singing in our workplace
for months.
We all started off doing that, yes.
Yeah, and of course, Don McLean's American Pie was very much about that event.
But February made me shiver with every paper I deliver. Bad news on the doorstep. I couldn't take one more step. I can't remember if I cried when I read about his widowed bride, but something touched me deep inside the day the music died.
Another Beatles story. There was a girl here, says this correspondent, who wanted to get the Beatles' autographs. So she dressed as a waitress, bought 4 coffees, put them on a tray, walked over to the hotel lift operator saying, "Coffees for the Beatles," and was immediately ushered upstairs straight to their room where she did meet the Beatles and get their autographs. Goodness me. If you had a bit of chutzpah, you were doing well, weren't you?
Sounds like, yeah. Yeah. All right. Yeah, I might try that next time the Beatles were in town.
Question 11. Which music video and accompanying song was used to launch the cable TV channel MTV at midnight on the 1st of August 1981?
Eric Clapton's I Want My MTV.
No, that is not okay. It. Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Okay, nice to talk to you. Here's Cindy from Happy Valley. Hi, Cindy.
Hi, Suzanne. Suzanne, I just wanted to ring up and tell you, I went to Theberton Girls Technical High School on Henley Beach Road in South Australia when the Beatles come, and I was 13, and what we did, we laid white butcher's paper all over the basketball court and wrote on it in black paint, "Welcome to Adelaide Beatles," because we were on their flight path going into the Adelaide airport, and they fly very low over our school at that time. I was 13. And our dear elderly headmistress, Miss Williams, was in on it as well.
Now, do you know if they saw it?
They did.
Oh,
they
fantastic.
Did. They said they saw it. Yes, I mean, it was on TV.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Black and white back then.
What a day, Cindy, that would have been.
And then we lined the street, Henley Beach Road. Yeah, because even when the Queen used to come, we used to line the fence, or stand at the fence along Henley Beach Road, because that was the way into the city.
Oh, fantastic. Now, Cindy, our question is this. Which music video and accompanying song was used to launch the cable TV channel MTV at midnight on the 1st of August 1981?
I've got no idea, Suzanne.
Well, that's all right. Thank you for the story, Cindy.
Yeah, that's all right. Okay, have a good night.
Excellent story. Gary in Tintinara.
Hi, how are you this morning?
Gary, which song do you reckon this was that launched MTV?
I think Dire Straits, but that's all I've got.
No, it wasn't Dire Straits. Lots of you do have it on the SMS, for example. Amy's got it, Jim's got it, Tana, Annette. You've all got the correct one. Ruby in Melbourne, hi.
Hey, Suzanne.
What was this song and accompanying video?
I think it was Video Killed the Radio Star.
Correct, Ruby. It was Video Killed the Radio Star. Well done. All right. Are we going to get all these questions in? I don't know. Okay. I'm going to ask you this. In which 1994 Australian film can the wedding of Princess Diana and Prince Charles be seen playing on a television screen?
Is it Muriel's Wedding?
It is Muriel's Wedding.
Yay!
Well done.
We will for the first time see our glimpse of the bride with her father, the Earl Spencer, and we'll see that wedding dress, which has been kept such a wonderful secret. There we are.
And what a bride for that graceful fiance. All those yards of silk. And what a dream.
Yes, well done, Ruby. You got the correct answer to that one. Question 13. I'm going to play a little bit of audio for you. Whose daytime television show was Donald Trump a guest on in 1988 when he was asked if he'd ever run for president and responded this way?
I just don't think I really have the inclination to do it. I love what I'm doing. I really like it. But I do get tired of seeing what's happening with this country. And if it got so bad, I would never want to rule it out totally.
Was it Oprah?
It was Oprah, yes. Well done, Ruby.
I saw a clip of that recently and I had an inkling.
Okay, that's three for you. Question 14. So controversial was the script for Monty Python's Life of Brian that no studio would touch it. So who mortgaged their house in order to finance the film?
Oh, no. Mm. I heard this factoid, but I can't remember if it was a producer or something or if it was one of the cast. I don't know. I'll just say, what's his name? Michael Palin.
It was not Michael Palin.
Okay.
Thanks, no Ruby. Worries.
Thanks, Suzanne. Good night.
Night-night. We have a few more lines free. I could probably do with some of your help to make sure we get this quiz to the end. 1-300-800-222. Hello, Graham in Perth.
G'day, Suzanne.
Who was this that mortgaged their house to finance Monty Python's Life of Brian?
George Harrison.
Yes, it was George Harrison. Well done. Question 15. What name was given to the so-called supergroup who sang Do They Know It's Christmas, the song written by Midge Ewer and Bob Geldof to raise funds for the famine in Ethiopia in 1984?
Yes, you would ask this question, and I do know it. It's memorable, but I'm sorry, I don't know the answer, so I'll pass.
All right. Well, that was very succinct, Graham. I appreciate that. Farewell. Rod is on the road. Lines are free, though. 1-300-800-222. Hey, Rod.
Morning, Suzanne, from the beautiful Coorong.
Oh, lovely part of the world.
Yes.
Rod, what name was given to the so-called supergroup who sang Do They Know It's Christmas, the song written by Midge Ewer and Bob Geldof to raise funds for the famine in Ethiopia in 1984?
I believe they called themselves USA for Africa.
They were the Americans who did We Are the World.
Okay.
Not the Brits who did Do They Know It's Christmas. So,
no worries.
Thanks very much, Rod. 1-300-800-222. Ray in Yeranga.
Mm. Hi, Susan.
Hi. Ray, what do you reckon this is?
I don't know, really. I was thinking of We Are the World or something like that. But no, it's not that.
No. So it's the name of the group of people who came together to do Do They Know It's Christmas?
Yeah. No, I don't think it was.
Thanks, Ray.
All right.
Tana's got it. Joe in Sale has it. Joe in Melton has it. Yep, Sandra in Perth has it. Bernadette also knows what this is. Amy, that's the correct answer too. And Jenny. Hello, Margaret in Newcastle.
Oh, good morning, Susan.
Good morning. Do you remember what they were called, this group of singers who sang Do They Know It's Christmas?
Oh, I don't know if I'm going for the generic name or not. I can't even think of it. I didn't know. No. No. No, sorry, Suzanne, I don't know.
That's all right, Margaret, I'll let you go then. We've got Matt in Southerton Park. Hi, Matt.
G'day, how are you going?
What were they called, all those singers who got together to sing Do They Know It's Christmas?
Do They Know It's Christmas? I'm sorry, I can't help you with that. I can't think of anything. It must be like one of those. Is it some of those people that go around and knock on your door and sing a song?
No, not quite, Matt. That's not what we're looking for. someone's saying, look, how rude and arrogant do they know it's Christmas time to a Muslim country? Actually, I went to Ethiopia about 10 years ago. It is a very, very, very Christian country. Everyone's talking about Jesus incessantly. I spent, 2 weeks there? I heard a lot every day about, I went to so many churches. Very, very Christian country, in fact. Vando.
Oh, hello, Suzanne. How are you?
Hello. All right, what did they call all the singers who sang?
They were called the Band-Aid. Band-Aid, just Band-Aid.
Band-Aid is correct. Where nothing ever grows. Yes, Well done, Vando.
That's right. Well done. You called Yorubadala Shire earlier. It's actually pronounced Yorubadala Shire Council.
Very funny.
And how good's Pemberton? Well done, Sonia. Does the Costa tree still open? Sorry, can you get
Vando,
on?
Vando, we need to move on.
Okay, let's move on.
All right, behave yourself. Which Australian record label did Michael Gudinski form in 1972?
Oh, gee, I know this. Oh, gee, I hate it when the door shuts. Oh, no, I'll have to pass in order to move on. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Vando. We'll talk again. I'm absolutely convinced of it. Julie from Mount Garnet. Hello.
Oh, evening, Suzanne.
Evening, Julie. Which Australian record label did Michael Gudinski form in 1972?
Was it Mushroom
Records? It was Mushroom Records.
Yay! I can't believe I got one right.
Yeah. Well done. Well done. Question 17. We might well get this done. In 1987, whose second album made history when it became the first album by a female artist to debut at number one on the Billboard charts in the US?
A female artist.
In 1987.
Oh, no, God, I can't think now. I've gone blank. Female.
Take yourself back to the 80s. Who was
being? Yeah, 87. Oh, I can't even think of one. I can think of them. Pat Benatar? No, she wasn't. She was English. No, let it go. Thank
okay.
you.
Thanks, Julie. Noel in Broadwater.
Hello, Suzanne. Was it Madonna?
It was not Madonna.
Good night, Suzanne.
Good night, Noel. Mark in Nunawading. Hi, Mark.
Hi, how are you?
Mark, in 1987, whose second album made history when it became the first album by a female artist to debut at number one on the Billboard charts in the US?
I'm thinking it's the late Whitney Houston.
Whitney Houston is the correct answer, Mark. Well done. Question 18. Can you name the TV show character who introduced colour television to Australia on February the 28th, 1975?
I was only 5 years old. Oh, my God. I'll have to pass on that one.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Colin in Carina.
Hello, Suzanne.
Hello. Who was the TV show character who introduced colour TV to Australia on February 28th, 1975?
Was it Auntie Jack?
It was Auntie Jack. Here's how it went down.
Auntie Jack! The colour, it's leaking through the window.
Turn a filthy thing all over my new carpet.
Look, it's filling the room. How are we going to breathe?
Quick, half of the Wollongong air. I'll try and hold it down. There it is.
Hey, look at me, look at me. I'm in colour. Come on in, it's lovely.
Well done, Colin. Question 19. We are getting near the end of our pop culture history quiz. Before being accepted by Bloomsbury Publishing in 1997, which novel was rejected by 12 publishers?
Oh, goodness me. 1997.
Yeah.
No idea, to be honest. I don't know. No, it wouldn't be that far back. I can't even think of one. No, I don't know, Suzanne. I'm sorry.
Thanks, Colin. It was nice to talk to you. John in Cremorne is a first-time caller. Hey, John.
Hi, how are you?
John, before being accepted by Bloomsbury Publishing in 1997, which novel was rejected by 12 publishers?
I'll give it a go, but just before I do, can I tell you, I heard the gentleman ring up who said that in the 1990s, he lived in Glebe on Hereford Street and Robin Williams got up at the
yes.
Harold Park Hotel. I lived in Glebe in the 1980s for a few years and Robin Williams got up at the Harold Park Hotel at that time. I think he was here to promote Mrs. Doubtfire. And my flatmate came back to the house And he had this dazed expression on his face. And he said, you wouldn't believe what just happened. Robin Williams got up and he did a routine that lasted for nearly 2 hours.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And, of course, you know, I was only minutes away, but yeah. We didn't have mobile phones, and so I didn't know.
Oh, gosh, wow. All right, John, can you have a go at this question? Before being accepted by Bloomsbury Publishing in 1997, which novel was rejected by 12 publishers?
Could it be Harry Potter? And the Philosopher's Stone.
Yes, it is Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, which means that you are now in the position to have a go at the final. Oh, gosh, I'm just trying to find the drum roll. It's hidden behind some audio that I need. Here's the drum roll. All right, for the win, John, who was the final performer at Woodstock?
Oh, gosh. Oh. I don't know. I'll say Joni Mitchell.
It was not Joni Mitchell, unfortunately. Let's talk to Chris in St Kilda. Chris, who was the final performer at Woodstock?
Jimi Hendrix.
Very nicely done, Chris, in St Kilda. It was Jimi Hendrix. Congratulations.
Thank you, Suzanne. Suzanne, what was the question before you asked the Whitney Houston question? What was that one?
Yes, it was her second album made history when it became the first album by a female artist to debut at number one on the Billboard charts in the US.
And before that, there was another question.
About Mushroom Records?
No, maybe before that.
You might have to go back and listen to the podcast. I don't think I can run back through too many more of them.
Yeah, I can't remember. Anyway.
All right,
yeah,
Chris, congratulations. Hang on the line. Have a yarn with Lockie and we will make sure we get your fridge magnet and a copy of Gardening Australia magazine out to you. Thanks so much for playing, everyone.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.